Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. My next guest is the director of the Institute for Popular Music at the University of Rochester, and we are shifting gears big time this hour to take a look at an anniversary. A band turning 50 years old. You probably know who it is.
Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
Yeah, the Monkees turning 50 years old. Three of the four band members still with us, and in fact, still playing music. But on this anniversary of 50 years, John Kovach got to thinking about the way sometimes people kind of dog this band. You know, that they're not serious, they're not taking that seriously. And so John and I decided we should talk a little bit about this, about our collective psyche, about the Monkees. What do we have against the Monkees, John Kovach? Yeah.
Well, when the Monkees first arrived, they were basically an acting troupe. I mean, all four of the guys had backgrounds in music and performed. Davy Jones had been a Broadway singer. In fact, he was played the Artful Dodger in Oliver and did a performance of one of their numbers on the same Ed Sullivan show, February the 9th, 1964, that debuted the Beatles on television. So he had a strong background in performing, as did Mike Nesmith and Peter Tork. Mickey Dolenz had been a child actor. And so they were all pretty experienced, but they were put together for the television show. And the music was just going to be something that happened as a way of kind of promoting this television show, The Monkees, which was essentially going to be a TV version of A Hard Day's Night. I mean, when it was first put together, all of it was put together, the plans were put together in the summer of 1965 before The Beatles' Help had even been released as a movie. And so Hard Day's Night was still very much on everybody's mind. So the group was put together as an acting troupe, and they played some, but they practiced their scenes and their acting bits more. And when it came right down to it, they weren't ready with the music. So Don Kirshner was brought in. He of Brill Building fame from the first half of the 1960s, responsible for a lot of those big girl group hits and things like that. Reportedly, the guy with the golden ear, he could hear a hit. He was brought in professional studio musicians and professional songwriters, and the Monkees mostly just sang on those first couple of albums. And so they were seen as a kind of a phony band. It was as if they were being put forward as a group who wrote their own music and played their own instruments, when in fact they were really just a bunch of actors pretending. And so the names went around like the Prefab Four, this kind of thing.
Never heard that. That's funny.
And so, at the time they were thought of as kind of an imitation Beatles, not even a poor man's Beatles, kind of a phony one. But, there was nothing that was happening with the Monkees that hadn't been a part of popular music production for 50 years at that time. I mean, Elvis never wrote any of his own music, nor did he play on many of his own records, except for those early Sun records where he played a little bit of acoustic guitar. Frank Sinatra never wrote any of his own music, nor did he ever play in any
Hold
of his
on.
Records. That's right. Yeah. And even, as
Frank Sinatra.
As much as we hold the Byrds as kind of a group of great authenticity in the 60s, that first single, Mr. Tambourine Man, was a song by Bob Dylan, not by any members of the Byrds.
Tell
and the
me
only
they
guy
wrote
playing
Turn, Turn, Turn.
Well, no, that was written by Pete Seeger.
Oh.
But they used studio musicians on that recording. So, it was I think what it really came down to is there was a developing rift between what I call the AM and the FM mentality in music. And the AM mentality is the pop mentality of, pop songs for teeny boppers, 2 minute, 2.5 minute songs. And the FM mentality toward the end of the 60s started to become the album oriented. The Beatles were shifting toward that. And the Monkees were happy to be the AM Beatles from 1964, 1965.
Did they develop any skills that we should appreciate? I mean, you're here in large part to say we shouldn't be looking back 50 years ago and thinking that was a throwaway nothing. They're not appreciated enough.
Well, and it's funny. People will look at those girl group records and Be My Baby and things like that and think, what a fantastic piece of pop music. But then they look at these Monkees hits, many of which stand up very, very well, especially the stuff on the first two albums where they had great songwriters, Neil Diamond, Carole King and Jerry Goffin. I mean, all kinds of really top people. And they are really, really good pop records, I think, that rival the best of the girl group records.
Does this one count? Who wrote this one? I don't. Daydream Believer.
Daydream Believer. This is Davy Jones singing the lead on this. Now, yeah. Who wrote this? Hang on a minute. We've got the record right in front of us. So there's so many songwriters, I'm not really quite sure.
And you know, John, one thing I did not know until getting ready for this program that I'd love for you to kind of tell us more about is they recorded a ton of stuff in a short amount of time, mm-hmm. didn't they?
Well, the studio musicians did.
I mean, the studio musicians.
The guys in the band were mostly filming the television show and right. doing guest appearances. You know, as celebrities, and then they would bring them in to do the vocals.
But when it comes to their musicianship, what should we know? What should we know about the actual musicians for the Monkees? Who were the Monkees?
Yeah, well, I mean, interestingly, what happened with the Monkees is that they, even though they were caught in this pop music machine where they weren't allowed to make a lot of their own decisions, they were part of a generation that really idolized the Beatles and a lot of what was happening in popular music. And so they even felt a little bit guilty about it. I mean, they kind of bought into the idea that they weren't authentic. So they actually got Don Kirshner fired from the gig so they could take over helping to produce their own records. At first, they didn't produce the records themselves. They brought in a different producer. But they were able to select the songs and play on their own records. So starting with an album like Headquarters, the Monkees were really trying to live up to what they thought they should be. Now, of course, there were hits, including Daydream Believer, from that period. But the records weren't as consistent in terms of pop quality as the first two had been. You got to hand it to Don Kirshner. He hired the best people in the business to do those records, and they still sound great.
And, you know, John, you have said to us, I think on a number of occasions, that whether you love a song or not, you can at least appreciate when it's been well-produced, well-put mm-hmm. together. And you really feel that way about the Monkees' music, especially in that early period, don't you?
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard to argue that they didn't have a historical importance. I mean, those singles and those albums rode the top of the charts. I mean, I think the second Monkees album was number one in the charts on a day that Sgt. Pepper was released in 67,
wow.
and then only went to number two, you know. So, I mean, they were really big. But again, this 1967 was still a year where AM and FM had not actually sort of splintered into two different cultures. And the Beatles singles were still on AM. But, you know, as I've said on the show before, Led Zeppelin proudly said they would never release a single. Of course, they did. But they proudly said it mostly to show that they didn't want to be thought of as part of that AM pop culture. So after the Monkees, you get groups like David Cassidy, the Partridge Family, even an animated group, the Archies, which is where Don Kirshner went after he got fired from the Monkees.
To the Archies?
He formed the Archies. Because, you know, hey, these guys aren't going to talk back. They're animated characters, right? They'll do whatever I tell them. And he had a big hit with Sugar Sugar.
I was going to say, the biggest hit would have been Sugar Sugar, right?
And the copy that I got, just to give you an idea of the demographic for this music, the first copy that I had, I think I cut off the back of a box of Super Sugar Crisp, where there were four different Archies records you could get depending on which box your parents bought at the grocery store.
Jenna, I think one of the reasons that people may not take the Monkees all that seriously in retrospect historically is because they feel like if there are modern comparisons, they're like a group like One Direction, where mm-hmm. you're created, you're plucked together for the purpose of being stars, as opposed to a group that's writing music for the purpose of writing music who become stars. Yeah. And or maybe they would be looked at as the Robin Fab of Milli Vanilli, you know, not mm-hmm. really even doing your own music. Are those fair or unfair?
I think probably it's fair. I mean, you really have to say that. I mean, I started out by saying, look, these guys were basically put together as a group to be part of a TV show that was essentially a takeoff on The Beatles' A Hard Day's Night. And so that's really where it starts from. The music was originally meant to kind of promote the show. I'm holding the first album in my hands here as we're speaking, and unlike most records on the back, this one is mostly an advertisement for the television show.
Yeah.
It says, "Meet the Monkees," so you get Davy, Mike, Peter, and Mickey Dolenz here. And then it says, "Watch the Monkees in color every Monday night on the NBC TV network, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time." You know, so there's the record is an advertisement for the show. It's like a flyer with music attached.
But you liked the music, though.
The music took off. They never thought that was going to happen. All of a sudden, they had a hit band on their hands, and the music ended up being more successful than the television show.
Isn't that amazing? Yes. Their best song. How would you rank their hit? What do you like best?
Well, I do like the stuff that people tend to hate the most. I mean, the stuff on the first two records, all of the hit records that you would get in their greatest hits collection, I think are fantastic. Some of the tracks that are the album tracks and the later ones that they wrote themselves and all that are interesting in a certain kind of way. But it really doesn't rise to the level of just kind of pop perfection that a lot of those Monkees hits are.
Last Train to Clarksville?
Last Train to Clarksville, great. I mean, very much a kind of a day tripper, Ticket to Ride kind of tune. That whole guitar lick at the beginning is very much modeled on the Beatles hits of about the same time.
I remember when I was growing up in the 1980s, across the street, there was a friend in the neighborhood who had a Monkees cassette tape.
Mm-hmm.
We used to play Monkees concerts in the garage, and I asked my parents growing up, could I be in a band when I grew up? And they said, well, sure. You know, I think they realized I didn't have a whole lot of talent, but sure. And I said, I either want to be in Journey or the Monkees. And they said, that's not quite how it works. But I mean, even in the 1980s, I was idolizing them, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed the music. But I look back now and I think, well, you know, the music is still fun. When I hear Last Train to Clarksville, I'm still into it. Daydream Believer, I'm a believer. You know, even the Monkees theme song.
Mm-hmm.
But what kind of actual skill do they have now? I mean, they're still recording, right? They're still
doing
it.
There's a new record out for the 50th anniversary. There's a big anthology, of course. You can get that, the Monkees 50, and then I think there's another single disc you can get if you don't want to pay for all three of the big collection. And there's a new studio record called Good Time or Good Times. I was just listening to it on the way in. And interestingly, it's produced by Adam Schlesinger. Now, I'm a big Adam Schlesinger fan. For folks who don't know who he is, he's the guy behind Fountains of Wayne and Stacy's Mom and all kind of thing. I think he's one of my favorite songwriters of his generation, and somebody who's very, very aware of and influenced by 60s styles. He was one of the songwriters involved in that Tom Hanks movie, That Thing You Do, and some of those songs are just pop perfection from the 60s. And here he is producing and playing, and they're even doing one of his songs. And it just reminds you that those Monkees records influenced a lot of people with a kind of pop sensibility. In fact, a lot of the kind of punk rockers, you know, when they were going back to kind of the candy punk of the 60s to try to, you know, like the Ramones and stuff, to try to revivify that kind of mentality, really sort of look to the Monkees as being kind of a better model in some ways than maybe even, I don't know, the Stones or Led Zeppelin or something like that.
Davy Jones passed away in 2012, but you got Mike, Peter, and Mickey. Do mm-hmm. they have actual talent, John?
I think they do. I think they do. Peter Tork was actually the best guitar player in the group, but he was cast as the bass player. Mike Nesmith, as a songwriter, actually wrote the song A Different Drum, which was a hit for Linda Ronstadt and the Stone Ponies in 1967. The Monkees were not allowed to record it because this was during a time when they weren't allowed to do their own music. So he gave the song to Linda Ronstadt, and she got a hit.
It became a hit.
Yeah, yeah.
So they did have some talent.
Absolutely. I mean, these were talented guys. I've got a live record here, Live 67. If you go on to Spotify or any place else, you can get the complete live recordings. And you know what? They don't sound so bad live, considering these were guys who were mostly actors for a living, who had to do the rehearsing on the side. Mostly the girls are screaming the whole time, so you can't really hear very much. But they really play their own instruments, and the tunes sound about as good as you would hear a lot of groups in a pub around Rochester or our part of the state playing the tunes. And of course, they sing like crazy. I mean, there's one thing you cannot take away from Mickey and Davy. They were fantastic singers, especially Mickey Dolenson. You know, I mean, they were just, they were gifted in that way.
And so I assume Mickey is still singing for them now, right?
That's right. Yeah, he sings most of the tunes on the new record. Mike, I think, sings one, and Peter sings one. And they have actually a Ghost Davy track. There were a lot of things that weren't released back in the day, and there was a track that Davy sang. And so, not unlike what the Beatles did for the anthology, they got a track together, and the rest of them played on it and sort of recreated a Monkees track. Some of the stuff on the new record are tunes that they did but didn't record or didn't release, so they went back and went to original studio tracks and added more stuff to them and all that. So it's kind of, I mean, if you're a Monkees fan, it's a lot of fun.
All right, so last question then. If I was taking your class and there was an exam and I had a short answer section, what's the legacy of the Monkees? What's the A answer for your class?
The legacy of the Monkees is they seriously advanced the cause of rock on television. Right? So together with shows that were beginning to pop up on American television in the mid-60s, like Hullabaloo, Where the Action Is, and Shindig. Remember that Where the Action Is had Paul Revere and the Raiders dressed up in the Revolutionary War costumes, right? And they had been a kind of a Northwest grunge band. The Monkees really took that the next step. It really was a television series about a bunch of musicians. Faux band they might have been in some ways. Still, it was almost like early MTV kind of mentality. Of course, they got their big return to fame in the mid-80s when MTV started playing all those Monkees episodes.
So if we hear a Monkees song and we get a hop in our step, we don't need to feel guilty or feel embarrassed.
Absolutely. No guilt involved. It's great pop music.
Thank you, John. As always, great to have you.
My pleasure.
And thanks for listening to Connections on this Labor Day. Have a great afternoon, and we will talk with you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.